The resurrection story is one of my favorite Bible stories. It offers a powerful perspective on how we can choose to show up in just about any circumstance of life, especially when we are challenged by a crisis, whether it be a change in circumstance that is outside of our control, or, as sometimes happens, a circumstance where we need to make a change. Whether it's something outside of our control or something that we are choosing, the Easter story offers a powerful roadmap for how to navigate change. It, in effect, offers us a way to move from life through death, a death of the known, and then back to new life. Let's take a moment first to review this Easter story. We consider that it begins on Palm Sunday, which is the beginning of what we call Holy Week. And on that day, on Palm Sunday, the people of Jerusalem, everyone now, is heading towards Jerusalem because Passover is happening. And so the people of Jerusalem are celebrating Jesus as he comes through the narrow gate. And they welcome him as their Savior. They see Jesus as the person who is going to deliver them from the persecution and the occupation of the Romans. So he is their hero. And in those early days of Holy Week, Palm Sunday, maybe the day after, we're not sure, part of what Jesus does is he goes to the temple, and rather than the traditional celebration at the temple, he overturns the tables of the money changers and creates a great deal of upset at the temple. And as a result of that, the powers that be realize that this man has to go. And so Palm Sunday is the beginning of where Jesus moves from a hero to a zero. And then what happens is he spends the rest of the week, the following day, continuing to teach. And then Wednesday, we're not sure exactly what he did because there's no record of that. One would think that he probably is with his friends. And then on Maundy Thursday, what we came to know now as Maundy Thursday, is the time that his friends come together for the Passover meal. And Jesus washes the feet of his disciples. He shares with them his final message: love one another. As I have loved you, love one another. And then he shares a meal with them. And at that meal, which we now know as the Last Supper, he tells Judas, who is one of his best friends, perhaps his very best friend, to go and do what he needs to do quickly. And Judas, who has made an arrangement with the authorities for 30 pieces of silver, goes and lets them know where Jesus is going to be. So the Roman soldiers are now told where Jesus can be found. After supper, Jesus goes to the Garden of Gethsemane with three of his disciples, and they fall asleep. And he is in emotional agony because he knows what's coming. And three times he asks them to stay awake with him, three times they fall back to sleep. And Jesus prays. And his prayer is that God take away this cup that he is being asked to drink. And he goes through this internal struggle. And finally he says, "Not my will, but thine be done." And it's almost as if I imagine that once he reaches that place, that's when Judas leads these soldiers to Jesus. And it includes the Jewish priests as well. And in a fit of anger, because now the soldiers are coming, the priests are coming, Simon Peter cuts off the ear of the servant of one of the priests. And even then, Jesus heals the man. And then allows himself to be led away. And I realize I'm not showing you all these lovely pictures. The following day, Jesus is tried 3 times by the religious Jewish leadership, 3 times by the Roman court. And because it's Passover, the tradition is that the people can choose one prisoner to be freed. And instead of choosing Jesus, the people choose Barabbas, who also is a prisoner and is the person who is allowed to go free. And so Jesus is crucified along with 2 other criminals. And on the cross, we are told that he speaks 7 times, words of forgiveness. "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Words of encouragement. To one of his fellow prisoners, he says, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Words to ensure that his mother will be taken care of, as he turns over the care of his mother to one of his friends. Words of pain. He says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" These words, which are from Psalm 22. So he knew his scripture. And he knew what he needed to do to calm himself. Just as we all sometimes have this experience of something happening and so we say a mantra of some kind, that's what I imagine Jesus is doing there. He complains that he is thirsty. And then finally, with the words, "It is finished," and "Into thy hands I commend my spirit," Jesus dies. He is taken to a nearby tomb. And on the 3rd day, it is discovered that the stone that is covering the face of the tomb has been rolled away. And Jesus is no longer there. That is the Coles Notes version of the Easter story. Now, I know that some of us may have difficulty believing the literal resurrection story. And I am not here to ask you to believe whether Jesus literally ascended or not. I do know that the man was powerful. And I do know that we are in our infancy of understanding what our power can do. And so I'm willing to allow that as a possibility in my life. There were many years where I didn't. But whether you believe in the literal resurrection or not, there are themes throughout this story, through Jesus' example, that can be illustrative for us, whatever changes we might be going through, whether we are going through Gethsemane experiences of our own choosing, or when our world is rocked by changes outside of our control. A loved one dies, war, loss of a job, loss of security, our belief system becoming challenged, any kind of tragedy, any kind of betrayal, a life-threatening diagnosis, all these things that can affect us that we have very little control over. This story can help us here too. When it becomes clear that our old reality must change, when we come to a crossroad, a choice point, at that crossing we get to choose how we will show up to the change. And here, say hello to Gladys for us, Peter. Gladys, the surgery went very well, by the way. Yeah. So what are some of these learnings that I'm talking about that I'm telling you will help us navigate from one life through the turmoil and pain and agony and confusion to a new life? Well, I group them into 7 F's because I like to do that kind of thing. The first is, oops, I went over too far. I didn't. The first is what we see Jesus do is he faced it. In the Garden of Gethsemane, in our Gethsemane moments, what Jesus did was sit there and work through it until he faced that there was a challenge that he was about to go through that was difficult. Now, what I normally do when I know something bad is going to happen, I try to do what I can to get the heck out of it. I try to change it. I try to do anything possible to control it. And sometimes that works. And sometimes it's out of our control. And when it's out of our control, the first most powerful thing we can do is to face the challenge. Not pretend it's not there. It's pretty clear that Jesus did not want to go through what he was about to go through. He asked that the cup be taken from him. And then he sat in silence until he came to the place where he could face what was about to happen. Rather than bargaining in some way to change something that's not able to be changed, Jesus then turned his energy inward. So instead of arguing against what could not be changed, he looked inward and became calm and present to what he could do. There's a lesson for us in that. Because we are so busy at times, the royal we here, are so busy at times trying to manipulate and juggle and, you know, if I did this, maybe this thing that I have to face won't happen. Well, that's energy that might be wasted. Go within. Pray. Face it. Center yourself. Not my will, but life's will be done. Then next, Jesus affirmed it. And by what I mean there is he stood firm. He stood dignified, graceful. Imagine how it must have felt to have gone from being a hero to a zero in the space of 4 or 5 days. Imagine how that may have felt for him to know that the same people who were calling him king and savior one day are calling for his execution shortly after. Instead of arguing or denying or explaining or pleading innocence, Jesus stood firm and calm. When Pilate asked him if he was the king of the Jews, he did not try to defend, explain, none of that. Instead, he said, "You say it is so." When he was challenged by the priests and the elders, he didn't say anything. He didn't condemn them. He didn't say mean things to them. He didn't call them names in return. Instead, he stood firm what he knew about himself. And that was enough. It was stronger to stand firm. And then, everything comes down to faith. If you stand firm enough, you will realize that what's holding you up is the conviction that all things are working together for good, even though you can't see it. At Unity, we teach that there is only one God. By whatever of the thousands of names we have for our understanding of that creative power, that there is no spot that God is not. That means in every experience, no matter how contraindicated, God is there. Order is there. There is purpose, intelligence, creation at work at all times. Emma Curtis Hopkins wrote this: "In the midst of a crisis, we can declare, 'This too is God. This too is for me. And I demand to see the blessing in it.'" And there are times when we can't see the blessing in it. I can't imagine that Jesus saw the blessing in what was going on for him. And yet, he trusted. He trusted that there was order in it. And when we can trust that there is order in it, then we can face every situation with a measure of calm equanimity, peace. And what that leads to is another concept which is related to faith, and this is a very important F word. Thank you. Forgiveness. On the cross, Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Think about it for a moment. They know not what they do. This is actually so true. Because what if Jesus had not been crucified? We don't know what would have happened. But as a result of the priests deciding that he needed to be taken care of, because of Pilate saying, I'm washing my hands of this matter, because of Judas saying, you're not the leader that I thought you were, I'm going to turn you over to the authorities. Each one of these people had an important role in the Easter story. And if it weren't for each one of these transgressions happening, we would not have had the story of the crucifixion, and we would not have had the story of the resurrection. And it's very possible that all of Jesus' brilliant teachings would have fallen into obscurity. We don't know. And so when we think of it this way, then even the most painful betrayals that we've experienced require no forgiveness. That does not mean we have to like it. It does not mean we have to agree with it. It does not mean that it didn't hurt. But if we can trust that there is order, that this is for me, then we don't even have to demand that there is a blessing in it. We know that there will be blessing in it. And then, feel the feelings. To deny that we are hurting is not being respectful to our human experience. Of course, there are times when we're going to hurt. Jesus said, take this cup from me. I'm scared. I don't want to do it. I thirst. This is uncomfortable. Why have you forsaken me? Invoking that psalm, looking for comfort. We must feel our feelings. We must acknowledge that we hurt. It's one thing to know that everything will work out fine in the end. It's one thing to know that our friends are alive, their essence fully alive with the angels. But it doesn't mean that we don't hurt here, in the here and now. And so this is a both and. Feel your feelings. And as part of that, finish your unfinished business. There is nothing that is more sad than to see someone who is grieving with unfinished words that they wish they'd said. With if onlys, I wish I'd. And so before we can move to a new life, whatever that might be, it honors the old life to finish whatever it is that needs to be done. It may be that we have letters that we need to write. It may be that there are apologies that we need to make. Finish our unfinished business so we can put it down and know that we don't have to carry it with us. That is the beauty of Son, behold thy mother. Mother, behold thy son, which is what he did when he turned over the care of his mother to someone else. This way, we move to the tomb. And it is in the tomb, in the darkness of the messiness, that we transform. We transform in this place where we die to the old way. We allow it to kind of find its place and settle. And then slowly, 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 we rebuild in that messy darkness. You know, they say that there's, when one door closes, another one opens. You've all heard that saying. What they don't tell you is that it's hell in the hallway. And this is where the hallway finds its place. And the best way that I can illustrate this concept is with the butterflies that you each have. Because a butterfly starts its life as a caterpillar. And as a caterpillar, it contains what they call imaginal cells. Isn't that a great word? Imaginal cells. And these are cells that will never get used in its life as a caterpillar. But it has them. And just like Eric Carle said in his little book, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, the caterpillar lives its life and then spins a cocoon and goes into this cocoon where it apparently dies. And it is in that, thank you, see? And in that cocoon, what happens is these cells that have never been used start to activate. And at first, they get munched on by the old caterpillar stuff, but they are resilient. And they keep multiplying and multiplying until eventually these imaginal cells turn into wings and legs and the body. And eventually there are enough of them that they create a butterfly. These cells were potential energy until they entered the cocoon. And so they, which have been lying dormant, waiting to be used, are what transform into a butterfly. And so it is with us, with any change. Any change, we have the potential for new, beautiful outcomes. Whether it's a change from life through death to new life, or whether it's from life of one kind, understanding of one kind, job of one kind, spouse of one kind, friends of one kind, putting them away, going into this messy middle. We have the resources within us to transform into something beautiful. After the trauma of the ending, the tomb is where we reform and transform. And that leads us to the Easter Sunday story, where we are today, where we come out of the tomb, where we are freed, where we are resurrected and born again. The stone which has kept us in the darkness is rolled away. A new belief, a new understanding, a new attitude, a new way of thinking, a new way of being emerges that was always there. The potential for it was always there. And so we are reborn and transformed. We rise again. And so when we are faced with a Gethsemane moment, whether it's a small Gethsemane or a large crisis, let us remember these seven F's. Remember one of them if you can. Face it. Firm it. Have faith. Forgive it. Finish it. Form it. Free it. You will roll back the stone of the old, emerge into a new way of being. That is the resurrection story. It can be your story. Happy resurrection to you. You are all beautiful, beautiful butterflies. Happy Easter.